Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Texans training camp is happening now. Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Monday to all of you. Hope you had a great weekend. I had a great weekend. Hope you had a great weekend as well. Good to be with you. We're all getting started together here at 6 a.m. bright and early on a Monday. We always appreciate you getting up with us. Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast. I'm the latter. I am Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne is an original Texan. He's an American hero, and he is here this morning for all of you. What's going on, Seth? How are you?
Yeah, I was just thinking about you as you get your daily coronavirus test. That it's almost like when you create a to-do list and you make one of the items easy so you can check it off. You have a very easy thing to do, which is you go get the easier version of the coronavirus test,
right?
And then you find out that you're negative. And that's like the absolute best, because that's a big thing to check off your list. Like every day you get the affirmation that, oh, I am relatively disease free.
Yeah, relative. Put it this way. I am free of the most important disease right now.
The most notorious disease of this year.
Right.
You might have some other disease floating around
Puzzle
in you, but nobody
yeah.
cares about that one. You'll be newsworthy if you got the coronavirus.
No. I am free of the disease that would keep me out of Texans training camp for the people. And as long as I'm free of that one, I'm good.
They'd let you in there with prostate cancer.
Yeah.
They'd be like, come on in, Sean.
Yeah, whatever.
Have some red meat. We don't care.
Whatever other insidious diseases are out there, as long as you don't got the COVID, you are allowed in. So, yeah, Seth, Texans training camp, we are two practices in. We'll break down some of the things that I saw and I know I shared with you. And just know that, in all honesty, they are taking this very, very seriously over there, the COVID. As we know, the Texans are one of six NFL teams. Hopefully it's still six. It was six before training camp or before the practices started that have not had a single positive test yet. And to my knowledge, I have not broken that streak. But we wear these sensors to practice that are about the size of a domino. We wear them around a lanyard, and they flash red if you're not socially distancing well enough. If you get within 6 feet of somebody who has one of those sensors, and everybody in the building has one, players, coaches, they all have them on their person somewhere, and media members. And we got a text from Amy Palsik the night of day one of practice. So practice is during the day. We get a text at night because the NFL uploads all that information from those little sensors that night and sends a report back saying, hey, here's how they did social distancing-wise. Remember we joked as to, oh, which media member is going to be the worst when it comes to social distancing at practice, you know, getting within 6 feet of other people, and we were trying to handicap who it would be. As it turned out, we were all tied for last. We didn't do well the first day, but the good news is they put cones out for us on day two along the sideline inside the bubble, probably more than 6 feet apart just to be safe, and we had to stand next to our cone the whole time. So we did much better on day two.
It sounds like they created their own individual dunce corners for each of you.
Yeah, well, I ran it by Amy. Amy's like, so how's practice going? She asked me last night, like, how'd the first 2 days go? And I shared with her the story of the poor social distancing and the cones that they set out for. She goes, no, that's funny. That's what I do for my first graders. And I said, yes, that's basically what we are. We are first graders at practice.
It's cool to see how well all these sports are doing this. I'd say Greinke, boy, Greinke seems to be in heaven. Greinke has just been set free to where he can go and be the natural social distance that he would actually desire, which seems to be about like 25 to 30 feet. He was watching the game Saturday night from right around first base, right?
Right behind the dugout.
A little past the dugout,
Now, is there anything better than a social media picture of a masked Zach Greinke sitting with a bunch of cardboard cutouts? Like it feels like it should be an album cover. It's a beautiful thing.
on Saturday, there weren't any fans right there, but he was about 10 rows down from those Chick-fil-A cows.
Oh, that's right, the cows.
Yeah,
I love your tweet.
So he was hanging out with the Chick-fil-A cows while he was watching somebody at bat. I can't remember who it was.
It was beautiful. Speaking of the Astros, so Seth, on Friday, you know, I like to jot little notes down over the weekend, like, oh, I can't wait to get to this on Monday, and after Yordan hits a home run in his first at-bat back, I'm jotting down notes for Payne and Pendergast on Monday. I'm like, oh, we have what was one of the most exciting individual events last summer. Like, I think you and I may have done a segment, like, what is a must-see thing right now in Houston? And the most must-see thing at one point was a Yordan Alvarez at-bat when he first got called up from Corpus Christi. It was incredible to watch Yordan get up at the plate. He's just majestic. And he hits a home run in his first at-bat coming back from, as we found out this weekend, coming back from the COVID. He had the COVID, we found out. He had the coronavirus. And he hits a home run in his first at-bat. And I'm like, this is beautiful. This is fun. It's great to have Yordan back in our lives. Before I can even talk to you about it, he's got sore knees.
Yeah. Nobody wants to talk about all these other side effects of the coronavirus, Sean. Yeah. Apparently, Yordan suffering from sore knees. Yes. Did he have sore knees for the 3 years previous to him getting the coronavirus? Sure, yes. But this is, I'm going to say this is directly because of the coronavirus. In that way, in my mind.
So this is like myocarditis of the knees,
yes,
is what you're saying.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay. In my mind, that way, it's something that can be recovered from, and it's not some chronic condition that he has. You know how I've always said that Kyle Tucker just needs a scoop or two of creatine a day? Because
right.
He's so adept at hitting it to the warning track.
Yeah, yeah.
I think with Yordan, we got to get him on a glucosamine, a Boswellia serrata, maybe some fish oil, whatever you can take to alleviate joint discomfort. I hope to God he's using one of the foam rollers. Those work like the Dickens. Those are awesome.
Is that what you used?
The foam rollers, yeah, foam rollers are—it's amazing. It feels you'll feel like your knee is just non-functional, never work again. You hit the foam roller for 10 minutes and it rejuvenates. Right. But those guys all use foam rollers these days, so I'm guessing he's just got chronic knee conditions.
Yeah,
and it's unfortunate. And you know why it's really unfortunate? Because one of the most fun things in the world has been to lord Yordan over the Dodgers.
Yes,
especially now. That the NL is going to be going to using DHs most likely in the future. There was no reason for them to have traded away Yordan. So I'd think, yeah, way to go, Dodgers, you morons.
I know.
Yordan, for my own sake, for my own ego and pride, Yordan needs to get his knees figured out somehow.
So the Astros do get the sweep over the weekend of the Mariners. Thank God for the Mariners, because the Astros are 11-10 now. They're 6-1 versus the Mariners, and they're 5-9 versus the rest of their schedule. But back to Yordan. Here is Dusty Baker's answer on Yordan being scratched from the lineup on Sunday.
He was supposed to be off today anyway because, he hadn't run that much down in Corpus. But then when Michael, we put Michael Brantley on the DL, on the IL, you know, he was forced into action. But then he came in today with the trainer and his leg was sore. His knee was sore, which we knew, which is the reason I was going to give him today off, because I figured it might be sore. And when he went first to third yesterday and slid in the third, it didn't look real pretty. So I was just hoping that he didn't come in sore this morning, which he did. And hopefully he'll be all right tomorrow. He's on a day-to-day situation.
It did not look pretty at all when he slid into third. I was like, is this the first time Yordan's ever slid? I'm trying to go through my mind and remember. That's just a big old lumbering Paul Bunyan of a man sliding and almost coming up short. We've had a few of those now. You remember Maldonado came up short?
Oh, yeah.
In the first game of the season?
Yep.
Now, Maldonado, wait, real quick, Maldonado, yeah. Stealing like a demon.
He's
gunning people down at second. If it involves second base, Maldonado's going to own it.
He had a birthday yesterday, too. Happy birthday to Martin Maldonado. Yeah.
It was his birthday. He gunned out two runners in the first and the seventh inning, and he stole a base.
It was a big day. Wait,
he stole the stolen base was Saturday, was it not?
Who cares? It was. Yeah. I mean, that it happened is amazing. So I don't normally do this, Seth, but, you know, give permission to athletes to only do certain things. I like for my athletes, especially the ones that we worship, like the altar of Yordan, to be able to at least run from first to third without suffering an injury that puts him on the bench for a few days. But this I am granting the Payne and Pendergast permission to. Yordan, you do not need to hustle down the first baseline on ground balls, even if it's less than two outs. Dusty said that. He wanted to use him as a pinch hitter yesterday, but it was a situation that was less than two outs, and or no, it was yeah, it was less than two outs. He didn't want him if he hit a ground ball. He didn't want him trying to leg it out to keep the inning alive. And I felt like saying, he doesn't need to. Like, just Yordan is up there to do one thing, and that's rake. You don't need to go from first to third on base hits. You can go station to station. Yordan, you basically have a license to jog or walk at all times. Just swing the damn bat. Don't stop doing strenuous things on your knees.
Hopefully, look, we know he's got knee issues long term, but maybe this particular one is more just because of the decreased ramp up and all that
stuff. Yeah, let's hope so.
Cross our fingers for that.
Let's hope so. We'll get to some.
Justin Verlander is going to start throwing this week. James Click.
Oh God! From your lips to God's ears, please let this happen. All right, we'll get to some Texans training camp observations at the bottom of the hour. There are NBA playoffs that are getting started today. It's official. They start tomorrow for the Rockets without one of their two stars. What's our concern level? What's our frustration level over the irony of this situation? We'll dig into that for a few minutes next. Hey, quick mention here. The guys on In the Loop will have the Bill O'Brien press conference at 12:20 today. Practice at 9:30. It's supposed to be outdoors. Mother Nature seems to be having a say in that, so we'll see if it's still outdoors. I doubt it if it's raining and thunder and lightning, but the plan is to have practice outside earlier this morning than normal, and then Bill O'Brien meeting with the media around lunchtime, 12:20. That'll be on In the Loop today. Make a note, we will be giving you training camp observations and thoughts at the bottom of the hour. Seth, the NBA playoffs start today, Monday, at 12:30 in the afternoon. You know my fetish for weekday televised sports, and I am very excited about the NBA playoffs being spread out over the course of the entire day. They can do this because there's no fans in the stands, so they can. Doesn't matter. People don't have to leave work to actually go to the game. They can watch it on their phone sitting in their cubicle or whatever. But get started today. Rockets get started tomorrow against the Oklahoma City Thunder. 5:30 tip tomorrow for game one. There will be no Russell Westbrook. Here's Mike D'Antoni with that confirmation.
You know, he'll be out the first game, but other than that, just kind of waiting. You know, we'll see how it responds. And every day, I'm sure he's getting better, but he won't be available on Tuesday.
This is just so frustrating, man. I feel like there have been various little kicks in the junk as Houston sports fans when it comes to injuries during 2020. You know, like with JJ going out last year halfway through the season.
That's a little various kicks in the junk.
Just the sports gods, not catastrophic ones. They're not like Deshaun with the knee injury the day after they won the World Series, the Astros, and you get Deshaun with the torn ACL the next day.
That was a full bore like castration.
Right. That was a guillotine. Like, these are just the annoying ones that your friends would do to you in junior high where they just walk by and they cup their fingers in a point and they just doink you, like, right in the junk and then they run away like that. That's what these have been. Like, JJ out for 8 games. Verlander may or may not be out. Russell with a quad. Like, come on, man.
This is like when you get grazed and it's just as bad. You don't get the stomach ache, but it's a more lingering pain.
Right.
The grazing hit is the worst. And that's what it's been.
Yeah.
It's always been into it. And God, it seems like at least 50% of the time it's a hamstring of some sort. Somehow the soft tissue stuff is the stuff that's the most annoying because it feels like it should be minor. So you hear, oh, Russell's got a quad. Okay, no big deal, right? No, it's actually kind of a big deal. And you're going to have to be without Russell Westbrook for the beginning of the playoffs, which start at 6:30, mercifully, on Tuesday. Like you said, there's going to be some great playoff times here. But I think the biggest thing, just overall, without even talking, before you even get into any specific matchups or anything, it's just that, look, since they went small, pace has worked really well, running up and down the court. You got to make up for your lack of size with pace. And when it's just Harden out there, we know what happens. It slows down.
Yeah.
It's just a different version of basketball. And all those electric things that can happen when you play small ball, you get a little bit nervous that it's not going to be the same thing.
Yeah, this whole not the whole small ball thing, but the pace that comes with the small ball,
yeah,
is all centered around Russell Westbrook. It was constructed for him. Harden, I think, can operate in any ecosystem. Now, when he's out there by himself, a certain ecosystem operates better than others. As you point out, Seth, I think you're absolutely right. But the whole pace, which is really what the Rockets have built this team to do, it's all Russ. It's all about getting rebounds on missed shots and getting out. Like, they're giving up second shots because they're a small team. But when they do get defensive rebounds, it's about getting out and running and getting easy baskets. With no Russell Westbrook, that goes out the window. So the spotlight is going to be on Mike D'Antoni these first couple games as to how he adapts, not only how he adapts with James and what this team looks like with James out there. But man, how do you cobble together those 10 or 12 minutes when James isn't in the game? What do you do then? Because Russell is really your only other elite facilitator on that team.
Right, and I think then it becomes a version of whether it's Austin Rivers or somebody else, you know, just somebody. I think Austin Rivers has done more off the dribble when he's had the ability to than perhaps people realize or thought. He just hasn't really had a lot of chances to do it, right? Between Russell Westbrook and James Harden, there's a whole lot of dribbling and ball handling and usage by those guys. So Eric Gordon getting back healthy, Austin Rivers making plays off of the dribble, and then just an amped up version of everything else that they've been doing this entire time. They just really have to take it upon themselves. Because even if you look at the stats, the bench numbers don't quite tell you how serious the issue can be at times. Because Russell's out there with the bench a lot. So those don't get counted as bench numbers. The bench has a huge, huge chore in front of them.
They do. There is part of me, Seth, and this may be a contrarian opinion, and it's not meant to be a hot take or anything like that. This is just how I feel about the series, with at least the portion where Russ won't be out there. There's part of me that's a little excited about James and Chris Paul being the only all-stars out on the floor for their team, because if there's personal beef, if there's personal animus in this series, it's between those two. And the Russell and CP3 parts of this story, to me, are something that would have been accentuated more if they were actually playing in the home arenas of these teams. You know, Russ going back to OKC, Chris Paul coming back here. How does the crowd react? Is there a video for these guys? Blah, blah, blah. Now, we've done some of this in the regular season already, some of the formalities, but that's a storyline that's more tailored for playing in the actual arenas. This is one where you could play it on a playground out back. You could play it at Rucker Park. You could play it at Fondy Rec. James Harden and Chris Paul do not like each other. And so that part, that it's just the two of them from a marquee standpoint, to me is kind of fun.
Right. And look, and I think that maybe the strategy that the Warriors used against Chris Paul when they beat the Rockets 2 years ago in the playoffs, which was just go at him constantly. It's a 7-game series. Chris Paul has a history of injuries, and he's been healthy this year. But wear Chris Paul down, and maybe you don't see it over the first few games, but by the time hopefully Russell Westbrook is back at the back end of the series and Chris Paul has been taxed and challenged and has had that burden on him, let's see how well he does in those last couple games. Harden's been the best player in the bubble. He's shooting 37.8% from the 3-point line. He's commanding. This is the thing that's annoying, because for the most part, most people that criticize James Harden haven't actually watched games. They only see gifs of him standing at half court, and they don't realize, it's because he gets doubled at half court. Yeah. The fact that he's commanding all that attention really just makes it as simple as, all right, can you guys make shots? Can P.J. Tucker, can you make open shots? Eric Gordon, can you stay healthy and look like your healthy self? All of that.
He's been the best player on a team that people think at least have a puncher's chance at the title. You know, I'll say that. Like, Damian Lillard was incredible in the bubble. He willed Portland into the playoffs. T.J. Warren was really good for the Pacers. You're right. James Harden has been really good. And
I'm gonna give him credit, though, and part of what I would give him credit for in the bubble is what he's done defensively.
Harden, no question. Yeah, he's been great at both ends, no doubt about it. All right, so the Rockets get started tomorrow. 5:30 tip tomorrow, local time here, and then we get an afternoon game. Seth, Thursday, we'll get into this later on in the show, but this sports schedule coming up over the next week is freaking amazing. It's incredible. It's tailor-made for multiple TVs. All right, the Texans, winners, losers from the first 2 days of practice, questions that need to get answered this week for the Texans. We do your deep dive on Texans training camp. I was one of 10 media members allowed there, so I was actually able to watch. So I will give you some of my observations. We'll get Seth's reaction to those. A little bit of news with the Texans yesterday as well from a roster standpoint. We'll lay it all out for you. Nice long segment coming up next on Payne and Pendergast. Stay there. All right, in just a minute or so, we are going to give you as comprehensive a summary as you're going to get on what's gone on with the Texans the first 2 days of practice on the radio. Because I can tell you this, because I'm the only radio person that's been allowed to watch practice.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
You guys are trusting my eyes and ears on this whole thing.
Did you ever think when you're a young kid just watching the various sports teams, of your youth that one day you'd be the only radio guy in Houston allowed into training camp?
When I was a kid, did I think that I would be the only radio guy allowed at Houston Texans practice? And I would say to myself, who the hell are the Houston Texans?
You need to set yourself weird and arcane goals the way Roger Goodell did. No other kid in America ever had a dream of becoming commissioner of the NFL.
Right.
So he had no competition for
that's
it.
Right, that's
From
right.
the time he was 16 years old, that's all he wanted. So when you're singularly focused on that, you can make it. Just like you made it to be this at this station in life now.
The single radio personality allowed at Houston Texans practice during a pandemic.
It's a very specific goal.
I need a pandemic in order to achieve it, but I think nobody else has their eyes on this prize right now. Yeah.
The universe delivered it for you.
That's
You're
right.
being rewarded. Yeah.
That's right. Thank the sports gods. So real quick before we get to it, though, we'll take you through all the things that I saw out there the first couple days, winners and losers, things that I'm looking for this week. And, Seth, you can certainly add to that list if you want. But before we get to that, just a little bit of Texans news. They activate Kenny Stills and Dylan Cole off of Cole off of the PUP list. Kenny Stills was on the non-football illness list. Both of them were at practice both days, Seth. They were, you know, Kenny Stills kind of strolled in a little later because he'd been working out over in the, you know, the weight room or with the trainers or whatever. Dylan Cole looks yoked up, man. Like, Dylan Cole looks ready to go. Like, I don't know how the knee feels, but he's been getting his upper body reps in, and he does not, I know your question is going to be this, he does not have skinny little chicken legs.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. I was worried about his ACL coming
right,
back.
Right, right.
So that's, it's hard, though, too. Sometimes no matter how hard you rehab, it just takes a while for the muscle to come back on that injury leg. But we know, like, Dylan Cole's always been a little yoked up. But you're saying it's kind of like those years where Cushing would come back and he was big even by Cushing standards?
Yeah, he looks.
I like that.
Yeah, he's in that mode where he was willfully and happily walking around practice with no shirt on, that kind of thing.
Oh, was he really? Yeah, oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So, like a Kahale Waring style.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no. And by the way, Kahale Waring, not in pads on Saturday.
Come on. Really?
Oh, seriously. Yeah, I'm dead serious.
Oh, well, okay.
He was out there. He had a cutoff T-shirt on. He was out there. He was joking around. I don't know if it's and I didn't see an answer from O'Brien from the pool report or anything like that. If he's one of those guys that has a very specific ramp up that O'Brien referred to.
O'Brien at the very beginning of training camp said, hey, listen, just so you guys know, you know, this is the first day you guys are out there, but we've been going at it a while. And some guys are going to be up, some guys are going to be down. I think he was trying to tell everybody, listen, please don't freak out just because you see Kahale Waring not in pads.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. They've got all this movement tracking data that they use these days. You guys might remember from seeing it on Hard Knocks with the Browns. And some guys, when they detect in their movement patterns that they're moving a little slow, they're like, all right, this guy needs a break. So it might have been as simple as that.
Yep. All right, so let's go through some winners and losers. I did a post. If you want to find the entire post, you can find it at sportsradio610.com. A lot of great stuff. Brandon Scott has good stuff up there. We've been doing our best to keep everybody as plugged in as possible on Texans training camp here, not only on the station, but on our website as well, sportsradio610.com. And let's start, Seth. Ben, give me a little mood music for this whole thing. Yeah, here we go. There we go. All right, so Seth, I'm going to go through the four winners first, and I want your reaction to each of these. The first winner is sanitization. We know that we're trying to get football on the field for the regular season. The Texans are going to extreme measures to keep everything clean and socially distanced. As I mentioned in the open, they sent a text to all of us in the media after day one of practice about our little sensors that we have that said we did not do a good job, I'm paraphrasing, we did not do a good job of social distancing. They gave us cones to make sure we didn't stand, that we weren't near each other, that we didn't get near players. You know, we're on this sideline where some of the position groups actually stand on that sideline right near us.
Oh, yeah, and they don't want your potentially filthy breath going over towards them.
At one point, Keon Crossan comes walking over. I have my notebook out. I'm taking notes. He comes walking over and stands next to me. He goes, what are you writing? And I said, I looked at him. I said, haikus. Do you want to read one?
Did he know what a haiku was?
Of course. He laughed.
Did he still teach haiku in school?
He did that day one. And then he came over again on day two. He's like, more poetry? And I said, yeah. But on day two, I said, you need to get the hell away from me because you're ruining my social distancing grade right now, Keon.
Yeah.
And I showed him the red flashing thing. Get the hell away from me. But they are.
I like Keon Crossan now.
Oh, dude.
He might be my camp favorite.
Seth, if you were at practice, as O'Brien would say, he brings the juice.
Does he really?
Yeah, dude, he's fired up all the time. He's hilarious. He's really, really funny.
You know what you need to do? Start have just a little page on there with checks and minuses. Like write key and crossing, and then have checks and minuses. Just fill it up with minuses, and be like, I'm checking you today.
Yeah. That is what I'm gonna do. Oh,
that. You can either do that or be a little less, be a little less edgy with it and make it all positives.
Yeah.
A couple negatives,
or just gigantic adjectives on there. Amazing, stupendous.
Yeah. Lunch pail guy.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gonna do that. So, anyways, my point with all of this is they're making every effort to keep things safe. Individual water bottles for everybody. The sanitizing the footballs every rep and things like that. Like it's wild. Seth, it is a crazy, crazy, unique, just different experience over there. But the Texans have been one of the best teams at this. The data's been good on them so far. Other than the
zero
media.
Zero positive tests, which I would say, as much as I've been complimenting the players themselves, not just with the Texans, but really in all of sports, where these bubbles are working out way better than most people anticipated, I would commend their friends and family too, because it means that their friends and family are being careful and staying away from other people or staying away from the athletes themselves. So good job, everybody.
That's right. Okay, so winner number one, sanitization. Now let's get on to actual football winners. And I have not brought this up on this show yet, but when the last time you and I were doing this show together, Seth, was before practice started. You and I did some radio on Saturday together, the Texans training camp special, and we're going to do that the next three Saturdays as well to give you guys the latest and greatest on the Texans. This is the first time I'm bringing it up on this show, so this might be the first time some are hearing this. And so I will prepare you, and I will admit that as I'm about to say this, there are going to be a lot of you that roll their eyes until this particular player does things in the regular season, maybe well into the regular season of several weeks of doing things. Okay. But I'm going to tell you right now that through two practices, this David Johnson looks really, really good. They're padded practices, so there's real blocking going on. There's real burst through the hole. We already know he showed up in shape. Seth, he looks the jump cut, which is his signature move. He had that on display a few times, looked really good. In one-on-one drills, pass-catching drills, matched up with safeties and linebackers, looked fluid, looked good, good hands. All the things that 2016 David Johnson was advertised as, he's showed off the first 2 days of practice.
And I know that Bill O'Brien implored us all to wait 3 years before we grade a trade, but he knows we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
I would say his biggest chance for immediate and quick redemption is if David Johnson does have a rebound year where he looks way better than he has the last couple of years. And we'll still debate that trade forever, but still at the very least that takes a little bit of the sting out of it. I think with David Johnson, really the number one key and crucial test for me is he breaking tackles? How is he at the point of contact? Because that's really what's been different the last couple of years compared to 2016 when he was so good, where he would explode into contact and he would deliver the punishment when defenders were trying to tackle him. We just haven't seen that in a couple of years. He's been athletic. I need to see that. So hopefully that chip on his shoulder is there and we see some more of that.
Yeah, he's looked physically really good. I don't know at what point we're going to get to gauge what you're talking about, Seth, breaking tackles, because I think
that'd
a lot of people.
Kansas City game. Yeah.
Well, maybe. I know there's going to be a couple scrimmages. I don't know if those scrimmages are, you know, total live fire or not for the Texans. You think probably not?
You know what? I was shaking my head no, because you never do that, but I forgot. Yeah, there are no preseason games.
Yeah.
So maybe just think of. And maybe not for the starters as much as maybe for some of the younger guys, just to get actual hardcore tackling practice in NFL speed. Maybe they do full contact. That's what I realize. I apologize for shaking my head, Sean. I was in old mode. I was in 2019, 2018.
Yeah.
Ancient history.
There will be a couple of scrimmages that are true, you know, with a lot of people that need to get ready for week one. You know, Anthony Weaver and Tim Kelly, you know.
They're going to have like a red-blue game.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That's right.
Can we televise that? I bet we could televise that. Or at least stream it.
I would say that I'll hold my phone up and do it on, stream it for everybody, but that is a quick way to get my media credential pulled.
You'd lose your reign as the only radio personality allowed at practice.
My life goal will be shattered because of one bad decision. Exactly. All right, Seth, I am going to give you a name. My next winner. We're doing four winners right now from the first couple days of Texans practice. This is number two. We're counting down to number one. Number two is a name that a lot of Texan fans aren't going to be familiar with, but he has gotten the coveted mention unprompted by the head coach in press conferences twice now. and his name is Chad Hansen.
Oh, that's right. The first time he said it, I thought he was talking about the punter. And I got, oh, no, that was Chad Stanley. Never mind.
Yeah.
Wasn't there another Chad Hansen? There was a Chad Hansen who was somebody, but go ahead.
There may have been. One of the Hansen brothers from that little Mbop pop group might have been named Chad. I would imagine there's probably one of those three, the little long-haired brothers that sang Mbop Hansen. One of them is probably named Chad. This one is a wide receiver who I don't think is related. He spells his last name differently. He is a career practice squad guy. But when the coach mentions your name multiple times in press conferences, with great enthusiasm, by the way, unprompted this early in training camp, it's a good sign. Seth, we know that with the history of this wide receiving core, the core four guys, Cooks, Cobb, Fuller, Stills, they've had recent injury history. So there is a spot on the roster for a capable backup. And I will say this, Isaiah Coulter, fifth-round pick, who I think a lot of people think, well, he's going to make the team. They used a draft pick on him. He has not practiced yet. He's had a nagging injury of some sort. He's been out there. He's been soft-tossing, and he looks like he's in good spirits, but he has not suited up yet. And meanwhile, Chad Hansen has taken the bull by the horns, man. He looks good in the one-on-one drills. He's making contested catches. And in 11-on-11, they've not used Fuller, Cooks, or Cobb really at all. Like, I think they feel like they know what they have in those guys. So it's been all backups out there. It's been Hansen. It's been QT. It's been Carter. It's been Stevie Mitchell. It's been Isaac Whitney. And of those guys, Hansen has shown big. He's put himself in position to make this team. At the very least, he's going to be back with the team on the practice squad in some fashion. But Chad Hansen has looked really good, and Bill O'Brien's mentions of him would seem to indicate that the head coach agrees.
And I think that the thing that's interesting about him is usually when we have one of these camp stars, a lot of times it's a slot receiver, and it's easy for those guys to show up against vanilla coverages because there's all kinds of space underneath. They haven't been scouted. Guys, even the draft picks, remember Braxton Miller looked really good in the preseason. Then once people started game planning for him, he completely disappeared. Chad Hansen's 6'2". This is a big kid.
He's a bigger guy, yeah.
Yeah, there's something there. Also went to Cal, and we know Bill O'Brien loves his smart, tough, dependable, or smart, dependable, tough, whichever acronym he's using these days. So I would imagine he's a brighter kid.
Yeah, he's bounced around. He was drafted by the Jets in the fourth round, so there's an NFL team out there that thought enough of him to use a mid-round pick on him. But then Jets, and then he's with the Patriots for a year, and he's been a practice squad warrior for the last 2 years, or offseason slash practice squad. Titans, Broncos, Saints, Texans. Who knows, Seth? You know, receiver, maybe the light goes on for him here, and the Texans get a decent guy to provide some depth, to provide a different look, too, for wide receiver, because they don't really have anybody with that, as you mentioned, they don't really have anybody that with that sort of dimension. You know, everybody they have is 6 feet and under speedsters right now.
Sean, he's been with a ridiculous number of teams for a guy that's only going into his fourth year in the NFL, which is weird. It's both a negative and a positive. The teams keep being intrigued by him, even though he's been with sixth different team that he's been with in just a little over 3 years. That there's obviously something to him that teams see, but he hasn't been able to latch on yet.
He's had a good camp so far, so he's made an impression. Seth, my final winner, Justin Reed. The Texans, as we know, didn't do a lot of roster churn on the defensive side of the ball, not nearly to the extent that they did with the skill positions offensively. So if there's going to be improvement in the defense, as you and I have talked about, it's going to have to come, to me, it's going to have to come mostly from what's the difference between Kurnell and Weaver at defensive core? What does Weaver do differently as defensive coordinator to maybe put his guys in better position? You know, getting J.J. Watt back is obviously a big deal. But I think improvement from within, and I think the biggest chance for improvement other than J.J. being healthy is Justin Reed taking a big step from year two to year three. The big difference for Justin Reed, Seth, he's healthy again, and he looks it. He looks healthy. He looks good. He looks fluid. He's engaged. He's energetic. He's making plays. This is great news for Texan fans.
Well, and this is where Anthony Weaver might really be the key to unlocking that next step in Justin Reed's development. Aside from being healthy, you know, these Rex Ryan, Mike Pettine-type defenses, they do some cool things with the safeties at times. So Justin Reed might be stunting, you know, making it look like he's blitzing up near the line and then bail off into deep coverage. He might blitz from a deep alignment. They're going to do some really cool things, and that probably means more plays for Justin Reed. And not necessarily more interceptions or anything. It might mean more plays in the backfield, like tackles for a loss and sacks. But that's where it gets – when you've got a really smart guy like Justin Reed at safety, it frees you to do so many different things, because what's the risk in blitzing? The risk is that you're leaving something open on the back end. You're leaving a deficiency on the back end. When you've got a really smart safety, he can make up for that. He can cover the areas and anticipate how a quarterback's going to take advantage of that. So a lot of different ways that Anthony Weaver can use Justin Reed, I think more creatively than Romeo Crennel did.
I want to play a cut from Bill O'Brien from Saturday, Seth. A question that I asked him about Eric Murray and just trying to get more clarity on what exactly Eric Murray is for this defense. And I have a follow-up.
Eric Murray, the safety Eric Murray, the Texans signed in the
preseason. That's right. Yeah, the free agent safety they signed from Cleveland. Yes, so good point. There's a lot of people be like, Eric who? So Eric Murray, the free agent safety that they signed. I asked Bill O'Brien. Eric Murray meets with the media today too, by the way. Here's O'Brien when I asked what Eric Murray's role is going to be on the team this year.
He's another good pro. He's in a lot of starting packages for us as a safety. He's a versatile guy. He's played in the deep part of the field. He's played down in the box. He's been a personal protector on the punt team. He's been on the kickoff coverage team. He's had a versatile type of career, and he's a very smart guy. And so I think he can fill a lot of different roles for us. You know, we have a lot of different packages on defense where he's going to be in there quite a bit, and then he's going to help us on special teams.
Okay, so Murray Seth is another guy who, look, the Texans see something in him that maybe others have not seen or he hasn't executed so far. They see him as a starting safety in the NFL. Forget about the special teams part at the end. My question for you is that, and I want to keep this tied to Justin Reed here, if Eric Murray is what Bill O'Brien describes him as, you know, can cover in the slot, can cover deep, can do all these different things, does that help? If he's proficient at those things, obviously, does that help sort of deploy the version of Justin Reed that you're talking about with Anthony Weaver? Next to Reed?
And it gives you, it gives you the ability to disguise. You know, ultimately, ideally, a lot of defense coordinators these days, they don't necessarily need one guy that's a deep, you know, center fielder type of safety. Although, I mean, those guys are still out there. But I think ideally you've got two guys that can play both deep and up in the box, because then you can really be unpredictable.
Yeah.
So Eric Murray, even if he doesn't have to be a stud, he just has to be a guy who's genuinely versatile. That's the other. I always worry, and I'm always nervous that Bill O'Brien in his quest for versatility is going to try to create somebody who's versatile who's not actually versatile.
Yeah.
It does seem that Murray's pretty versatile. You know, with the Chiefs and with the Browns, he had different roles. In one place, he was a deep safety. In another place, he was more slot corner. So he can do all that stuff.
All right, so the four winners I have from the first 2 days of practice, sanitization, David Johnson, Chad Hansen, Justin Reed. Let's rapid fire four losers from practice in days 1 and 2 for the Texans. Day 3 of practice today at 9:30. We've got you covered here on Sports Radio 610. This is an article that I wrote for sportsradio610.com if you want to go find my full detail. Four losers. We'll rapid fire these, Seth. The first one, people who tackle in a practice where you're supposed to stay up the whole time. Bill O'Brien does not like this. When you go down either voluntarily or you knock somebody else down at these practices, that was the most animated I saw Bill O'Brien in practice, with a lot of words that I can't say or else we'll get kicked off the air. He does not like when you tackle or bring teammates to the ground at a tackle-less practice. That is as taboo as it gets. That might even be more taboo than the red flasher on my social distancing chip.
Yeah, and you might be noticing it more, Sean, this year because they've had their serious practices in the bubble. A lot of times it's they have more of their high-intensity practices outside, and then when they come into the bubble, they tend to be a little bit more, I don't want to say relaxed, but they're a different tempo. They're not as high contact. Where now I think they're being, because it's a controlled environment and everything else, I think they've had more of them in the bubble. So you notice Bill O'Brien freaking out about that.
Yeah.
That's a modern NFL coach knows that injuries, especially stupid injuries, are the worst thing that can happen to your team. So part of learning to be an NFL player is learning how to practice really hard and really fast, but without taking guys to the ground and having unnecessary injuries.
And it was young, and it's funny you bring that up. It was younger players who were having trouble staying up in these plays.
Like
the vets were fine. It was the younger guys who were dragging guys down, falling down themselves, that kind of thing.
That's one of the biggest challenges for defensive coaches these days, and some guys do a good job of them and some don't. You can coach tackling really, really well without actually taking people to the ground because it's all in the setup and the angles and everything, but you got to work at it. And some coaches get lazy with it and just allow guys to tag off, where other coaches – require guys to break down and get right up to where they would be tackling somebody.
All right, next loser from days one and two of camp, and that loser is a little harsh in this case because the guy got injured, and it's just you feel terrible for the kid. But Duke Ejiofor, who has spent the entire year rehabbing an Achilles tear that he suffered in the offseason last year, never got on the field for a single practice last year, only got on the field for a single practice this year, Seth, because at the end of the day, Friday, towards the end of practice, Duke Ejiofor tears his ACL. He's a kid who came into the league with injury issues. That's why he fell to the sixth round of the draft. He flashed some things his first training camp in 2018, but he just can't stay on the field. And you feel terrible for Duke Ejiofor. And he's a guy, Seth, that if healthy, might have provided a skill that the Texans can use on the edge.
Yeah, and he's bigger than Jacob Martin. I don't think he didn't play with the same power that I think he's capable of 2 years ago, the last time he was healthy. I would imagine that he still gets another chance with the Texans. I mean, if you go back to Lonnie Ballantyne was the guy that I think he came. He ended up being with the Texans for four training camps.
I think he stayed all four training camps of his rookie contract. He did.
And he hardly ever touched the field, even in a preseason game, because he got injured every summer.
Every year.
But there's some, you know, sometimes guys just have bad luck. Frank Gore tore two ACLs early in his football career and then went on to be one of the most durable running backs ever. So I think that Ejiofor's got enough upside that he gets another chance next year.
All right. The last loser that I want to hit here. People wanting to view J.J. Watt do football things. I'm getting a lot of questions asked about that. Like, how did J.J. Watt look? J.J. Watt on day one was in uniform, in pads, in a helmet. He did a few one-on-one drills and then was not out there for any of the 11-on-11. It was like that for day two with Benardrick McKinney. Day two, I don't even think I saw Watt in the bubble at all. So I think this goes back to what you were saying earlier in this segment, Seth, which is O'Brien has made it clear there are different schedules for different guys. They are clearly, and J.J.'s made this clear too, he sat down with O'Brien and Easterby before the preseason, and they came up with a plan to make sure that J.J. Watt is fully activated in there on week one of the season and that he sets himself up for the best chance of health for 16 games this year. So he was not out there. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. And I don't know. Like, J.J. will be fine and ready to go. So
yeah, no, he's healthy, and he was bopping around his head back and forth to the music. So there you go. We didn't get to this. The last loser on my piece, fans with tickets to the home opener. Not that you guys, if you have tickets, you guys are all losers. Like, oh, what a loser. No, but you're not going to get to go see that game. What does that mean for the home opener against the Ravens? And we'll also dig into the sports fire hose that we talked about during the pandemic, where we're all of a sudden going to get deluged with sports. It's here. It's here this week, and it's going to ramp up big time. We'll take you through it next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.